when you get your standard of truth and spirit, and the way that the Christ is coming to mankind today is just that. The Christ is coming to mankind today as God's ideal, made manifest as a divine infinite calculus of ideas. The infinite order of spirit. The infinite categories of spirit, which means classifications within classifications, endless classifications. And today, the way that Christ, this is the spirit of truth that Jesus promised should come to mankind, the divine Christ or truth, the truth that God knows about himself and about every one of his ideas is the Christ. What God knows about himself and about every one of his ideas is the Christ. It's the divine ideal. And that truth is coming to mankind today through a divine, infinite calculus of ideas. Now, a calculus is a process of reasoning by symbols. That's all it is. It's a process of reasoning by symbols. And so today, in human experience, Mazzetti says exactly the same thing when she says, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. And we're learning to reason by symbols, same as you do in any intelligent subject in the world. As a matter of fact, you don't do anything in the world without symbols. Your alphabet are just 26 symbols. Everything you do in human experience, everything you do is simple. If tomorrow morning you say you'll go and buy a coat, you explain what you want in symbols called words. You give them a symbol called money, but it's all symbols. Bottom line has its calculus, its so-called calculus, of materiality. And today, the divine ideal of Christ in the scientific age is being expressed and made manifest through the order of spirit, the infinite order of spirit, infinite categories of spirit, and that is a divine, infinite calculus of God's ideas, all operating according to law and order and rule and system and method and form and plan and design and everything that you can think of. And so today, in this scientific age, and what you get in material science today is only the attempt to counterfeit the appearing of the Christ. That's all it is. It's the attempt to counterfeit the appearing of the Christ. And material science would have us believe that its thinking is exact. Of course, everybody knows now it isn't exact. The physical scientists know it better than anybody else. It is not exact and can't be exact. You can't think exactly about matter. It's an impossibility. It can't be done. And so, today you find physical science counterfeiting the exactness of the divine, infinite calculus of God's ideas. But this coming to humanity today of the Christ idea through a divine, infinite calculus of ideas, which you can learn far more intelligently than you can learn subjects like music and mathematics. And you learn them through a calculus of symbols, that's all. They're through a process of reasoning by symbols. Today we can learn the ideas of God through mind, through spirit, through soul, through principles, through life, through truth and love. And moreover, we can do more than that. Now I'll go over it with you before we get through very thoroughly. You can do more than that. You can take mind and you can build up in your thought exactly what mind is. You can build up just what mind is as your thought grows, so your concept of what mind is grows. And you can take that and you can analyze and reverse and destroy every single thing that is unlike mind. For instance, mind has idea. you can know that because creation consists of ideas, so in creation there's no vague and wandering thought. Because mind is the creator, there's no other creator. Because mind is infinite intelligence, there's no other intelligence and no non-intelligence. Because mind is law, there's no lawlessness. Because mind is omni-action, there's no overaction, inaction, or diseased action. Because mind is divine guidance, there can be no mistake. Because mind is infinite medicine, the infinite medicine of mind, there can be no lack. Infinite healing power, there can be no lack of healing power. Because mind is the infinite all, there can't be any nothingness. Where space is filled with the infinite all of mind, there can't be any nothingness. Who was it telling me a few days ago that Einstein said that the time had come when men must give more time to thinking and not so much time to books? Rossetti said that. He said, books are but ladders let down from heaven, on which thoughts ascend and descend. Said, books are but ladders let down from heaven. And really and truly, we have got to form the habit of thinking with God. And more than that, thinking as God's idea. Thinking as the very presence and power of God. And what are we going to think about? We're going to think about God. We're going to think about mind. What is mind? Creator, cause, origin, the source of all being. What's it create? Ideas. What are the nature of those ideas? They're omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, omniactive. Then you're going to take that and you're going to apply it intelligently, all that you think about mind. You're going to apply it intelligently to all that is the opposite of that, just as you apply 2 and 2 are 4 to 2 and 2 are 5, or 2 and 2 are 7, or 2 and 2 are 9, or 2 and 2 are 11. You're not going to try and apply mind's ideas to that which is untrue about spirit. That isn't science. That isn't science. You see, as your culture grows in any subject, so your ability to analyze, to bring to the surface, and to destroy all that is untrue about that surface also, as subject also grows. You see. And so as our culture of spiritual things grows, so our ability, as was so pronounced in the life of Jesus, our ability to take the beliefs of the carnal mind, either as mentality, carnal mentality, or as mortal beliefs, doesn't matter what it is, to take those and to analyze them, bring them to the surface or uncover them, and so replace them with spiritual facts, which is the destruction of them, must grow. And so I am convinced that today, unutterably convinced, that today the Christ or truth, which is God's own ideal of himself. God says of himself, the infinite mind is forever saying of itself, I am the infinite life, the infinite fatherhood. I am the infinite truth, the infinite ideal or son. I am the infinite love, the infinite motherhood or fulfillment. I am life, I am truth, I am love. Now that ideal is made manifest in what we call creation as infinite ideas of life, of truth, and of love. And those ideas are the realities of all things, of you, of me, of the whole universe, of health, holiness, and happiness, of everything that ever existed. And those ideas operate throughout all eternity with the nature of ever-presence. They operate throughout eternity and they are always available to spiritual consciousness. They are always available. so that the kingdom of God, or the divine infinite calculus of ideas, is ever present and ever available to every spiritual thinker, just as the calculus of mathematical ideas is available to every mathematical thinker, or the calculus of engineering ideas is available to every engineering thinker. And so, I am unutterably convinced that today, the Christ, or truth, God's own truth about himself, about his own ideal, and that ideal must be expressed as ideas. An ideal that was unexpressed wouldn't be an ideal. It just wouldn't be an ideal. It would be dead. There would be a vacuum. It would be dead. But God's own ideal of himself, that he is the infinite life, the infinite truth, the infinite love, that triply divine principle God, is forever conscious of its own ideal of itself. And that consciousness is reflected as infinite individual spiritual ideas, the truth about everything that is. And that today, range of ideas, from the infinitesimal to the infinite, we are today grasping in what is called the calculus of ideas. That is a process of reasoning through symbols. And those symbols are mind, spirit, soul, principle, light, truth, and love, operating as the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science, all blending and blending and blending and blending infinitely. What's your thinking? When you find yourself getting morbid over conditions and being disturbed over them, analyze the situation. Ask yourself what's going on. When you find yourself getting afraid of certain conditions, ask yourself, why am I afraid? Get to the bottom of it. Analyze it. There's one thing error wants you to do. Leave me alone. The last thing in the world error wants you to do is to analyze it with truth. That's the last thing in the world it wants you to do. It wants you to let it drift. Leave me alone. Why art thou come hither to persecute us? And get into the habit of, if you've got a machine that goes wrong, you analyze the situation. Something goes wrong in your house, you analyze the situation. Well, take your own mentality and lay it on the table. And when you find yourself morbid or worried or fearful, ask yourself, where does this thing come from? And ask it with spiritual sense. And sure, you'll find out that it's some claim of heredity, or some claim of temperament, or some claim of nerve, or some claim of self-centeredness and egotism and absorption in self, something of the kind going on. And when you find out, then you'll deal with it intelligently. But as long as the carnal mind can keep you not finding out, not dealing with it intelligently, you won't get anywhere. You'll just say, oh, well, I get morbid. See? Well, what's the use of getting morbid? The way is to find out how you don't get morbid and why you get morbid, why you should get morbid. Analyze it and get down. Discern the error in your patient's mind, which makes his body ill, and then you'll rest from the deluge when you've done that. So let's be metaphysicians. Let's use our Christ idea to analyze and destroy matter. Remember what it is. It's life and spirit. It's the one life reflected. Reflected, and that reflection means divine order. It means divine diversification, classification, and individualization. It means the range of God's ideas. The range of God's ideas from the infinitesimal to the infinite. And so now you get it as life and spirit at the point in as truth, and now you're getting it in this order of mind, at the point of truth. So you see how all of these things blend and blend and blend. Now, after all, think of the way that things blend in music, and nobody thinks anything of it. They blend and blend and blend. Because when you learn them, this thing now because of years and years of thinking about it, these lendings present no difficulty whatever to one. But if you didn't know them, they'd present a great deal of difficulty. But when you know the tones, when you've sat by the hour literally, and you've talked with God and as God's idea, and you've thought to yourself, now what is mind? What does mind do? What is the nature of mind? What is spirit? What does spirit do? What is soul? What does soul do? That's education. That's education. And it's the best kind of education. Because what are you doing? You're praying. Communion is prayer. Communion is prayer. And when you commune with that which is God, you commune with that which is the infinite through the highest symbols, through the very highest symbols. And as I said to you, the symbols of the Bible are spirit, soul, life, truth, and love. When God showed Mrs. Eddy this, in this scientific age, when thought is everything, and one recognizes that nothing starts without thought, when God showed Mrs. Eddy this ordered sequence of synonymous terms for God, she brought in the term mind, which the scriptures indicate, but they never used the term mind. And in that way. And she brought it in to indicate the beginning, because you had thought, you had let there be light. And then in this scientific age, when one wants to understand and demonstrate everything, she brought in the term principle. You don't know, and I don't know, what kind of language we will use to symbolize the ideas of God 100 years from now. We haven't the faintest idea. The prophets gave a contribution. Jesus gave the great example, the great, the unparalleled example. John, Paul, all of them gave their contribution. Great men and women all the way have given their contribution. Mrs. Eddy has given a great contribution. But don't make any mistake. There's no finality to truth. Jesus knew that. He said, if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I go, I will send you another Comforter, that he may abide with you forever. He saw that they were pinning everything on the person of Jesus instead of on the truth. And he saw the time coming when he couldn't stay. Jesus' thought was rising into the realm of reality so fast that he couldn't stay. It became an absolute impossibility for him to stay. And you and I don't know how this thing is going to be symbolized in the years to come. We don't know. All that was contributed by the Bible will stand. All that was contributed in this textbook will stand. But it'll be added to. It'll be added to just as sure as we sit here. There's no finality to truth. None whatever. And the person who thinks there's a finality to truth, Mrs. Eddy never gave any indication. She speaks of the final demonstration that came to her, but not the final demonstration of truth. Because Mrs. Eddy knew the nature of the infinite. And she says, infinite progression is concrete being. She says, it's ever rising and rising, higher and higher, from a boundless basis. And so you and I don't know, in the world to come, in the days to come, 50 or 100 years, when the terminology of that day is a good deal different to ours, they'll introduce that terminology to explain it, but that doesn't mean that what's gone before will be obliterated. The Bible isn't obliterated to us today. It's the chain of scientific being reappearing in all ages, maintaining its obvious correspondence with the scriptures and uniting all periods in the design of God. And Mrs. Eddy says that personal revelators will take their proper place. Doesn't matter who they are. They'll take their proper place in history. But truth itself, God's truth, is forever unfolding itself. She told someone once that she had to be healed of the belief that she was a discoverer of truth. The truth never needed to be discovered. Never needed to be discovered. But thank God you are the discoverer of truth, that's all I can say. There is nothing so valuable to the individual Christian Scientist as an understanding of principle. In the first place, principle is that which you demonstrate. Principle is that which demonstrates itself as life, as truth, as thought, and it uses your thinking. But principle is that which demands obedience. Principle is absolute government. It demands absolute honesty. It's always foundational and basic. And if men today only understood the nature of principle, what we could do in the way of government in this world, and if men understood the nature of principle in business and in their homes and in everything else, what we could do is just beyond words. And don't you see, as you understand the nature of principle, that principle uses you, and then you have demonstration. The people who have demonstration are the people who are willing to let principle use them. Those are the people who have demonstration. As I told you, Ms. Eddy said about the very serious case she healed. They asked her how she did. She said, "Oh, I got Mary out of the way." When we finish, I want to go over with you a thing that I've often gone over with you, and a thing that I am very, very, very keen on, and more keen as the time goes on. That each one of us should learn how, in the holiest and most consecrated thinking, to declare and to realize the facts about mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and then to use those facts to counteract mortal mind's lies about them, to counteract all that is unlike mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And Ms. Eddy ends the chapter on Christian Science practice with that demand. She ends the chapter on Christian Science practice by saying, "Christian scientists, be alert yourselves that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake." Now, that isn't just something that before you go to sleep you say, "Well, mental malpractice can't harm me," because that doesn't mean anything at all. Or when you're awake, when you wake up in the morning, you say mental malpractice. But when it means this, that constantly and persistently you are cultivating in your thinking the ideas of mind. And as you do that, those ideas analyze for you and uncover and destroy all that is unlike mind. And so with the ideas of spirit, the ideas of soul. Now, I've told you many and many a time, and I'm more convinced than ever, that the reason that I was able to see that Mrs. Eddy's discovery and that the story of the record of the Bible is really scientific is that I have always done this thing. I've always done it. I don't know why, I couldn't tell you why. But I always saw that the problem before humanity was to scientifically and metaphysically reduce the carnal mind to its common denominator, scientifically and metaphysically, nobody and nothing. And when one begins to handle day in and day out, from the holiest point of view, from the throne of grace, from the fact that God is all, when one begins to handle these claims of animal magnetism, one begins to lose his fear of them. Then you haven't any more fear of them, and you handle them as one having authority. And then in some small degree, you can say what Jesus said, "The prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me." In handling the claims of evil, we handle them by filling our heart with the ideas of God. Only, as far as I'm concerned, as the years have gone on, instead of doing it through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, I've done it through love, truth, life, principle, soul, spirit, mind. Because I find that when I start from love, and I think that is the Christianity way of doing it. Ms. Eddy says that the word of God says darkness was upon the face of the deep, and God said, "Let there be light." The Christ is the divine manifestation of God which comes to the flesh, the fleshly sense of things, to destroy incarnate error. But she says of Christianity that it obliterates the mortal concept. It wipes it out. It obliterates the mortal concept. He concluded his charge thus. The plea of false belief we deem unworthy of a hearing. Whenever you start from love, you always obliterate the whole gamut of the carnal mind. Whenever you start from love, you start with the proposition that there is no so-called carnal mind, and you obliterate the whole thing when you start from love, and then you deal with it as nothingness. Let what false belief utters, now and forever, fall into oblivion, unnailed, uncoffined, and unknown. You don't tell a story about it, you don't pull the bell, you don't tell any story about it. You don't even bury it. It's uncoffined. And it's unknown. You couldn't imagine anything more striking than that. That let what false belief utters now and forever fall into oblivion, unnailed, uncoffined, and unknown. That's the way to look at error. When a case of healing has taken place, the best thing to do with that case of healing, it's a very interesting thing in the practice of Christian science, that as time goes on, you look back, you've healed hundreds of people, and you look back and you try to remember it. And it's the most difficult thing to remember it. The thing's faded. I meet people constantly who say to me, "Do you remember when you helped me and healed me of so-and-so?" And I've forgotten everything about it. I don't remember one thing about it. I'm surprised when they tell me. Because the thing must be uncoffined, unnailed, and unknown. And I tell you, that's more true about sin than disease. If you help somebody who's suffering from sin, and you heal them in Christian science, the best thing you can do is to forget all about it. Let it be unnailed, uncoffined, and unknown. Let it disappear. Don't hold that sin on that person. Let the whole thing go. It never was true. It's no part of man. And the right thing to do with it is to let it go. Into its own native nothingness, into oblivion. And don't hold it on them, and don't remind them of it. No claim of sin or disease is really healed until you reach that point. When you reach that point that the thing is obliterated, gone, it's gone into oblivion, then the work's done. Not before. And so, according to our statute, material law is a liar. Cannot bear witness against mortal mind, neither can fear arrest mortal man, nor can disease cast him into prison. Our law refuses to recognize man as sick or dying, but holds him to be forever in the image and likeness of his Maker. The standard of a Christian science practitioner is perfect God and perfect man, perfect cause and perfect effect, perfect mind and perfect idea. That's his standard, and the standard from which he should never budge. He should never budge. The standard of the Christian science practitioner should be, what is God? God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. What is man? He's the likeness of mind, his idea.
is the likeness of spirit. The spiritual idea is the likeness of soul. Is forever identified with God. Is the likeness of principle. He's perfect and demonstrated as perfect. Is the likeness of life. He's eternal. Eternal and immortal. Is the likeness of truth. He has the form of the Son of God. He's the likeness of love. He's complete and fulfilled. And that should be the standard of the Christian Science practitioner. And from that standard, he should advance to analyze, uncover, and annihilate the claim of error. Although refuses to recognize man as sick or dying, but holds him to be forever in the image and likeness of his Maker. Reversing the testimony of personal sense and the decrees of the court of error in favor of matter, spirit decides in favor of man and against matter. We further recommend that Materia Medica adopt Christian science. It'll do it someday. It'll do it someday. They're getting nearer and nearer. They're hardly a good clinic now that hasn't got what they call a psychotherapist. Well, they're getting to the point where they recognize that disease is mental, and they hope to heal it through the action of the human mind at present, the improved action of the human mind, but won't do it. The only thing that will heal is the mind of Christ in its science and its system, and someday they'll see that. Love's provision is that love always has a Christ. Love, because it is love, must translate itself as loveliness. And the whole fact of being is that divine principle love forever has its own ideal of its own loveliness. And because it's love, it translates that ideal down to the point of infinite individual spiritual ideas. The truth about you, me, and everybody. And that translation, that consciousness that divine love has of its own loveliness and its own ideal as a fulfillment of its own loveliness, that Christ or ideal is forever being irresistibly translated throughout all space, throughout eternity, because God is love. And because God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive, therefore that ideal is forever being translated as the truth about you, the truth about me, the truth about us as idea. And all we've got to do is to accept that. That's all we've got to do. To let it come in and abide with us. And we accept it through science, through spiritual thinking. We accept it through inspiration, through spiritual understanding, through what we call science, through a system, a divine, infinite calculus of ideas. But all we've got to do is to accept it. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man open, I and my Father will come in and abide with him. Now, as you accept that idea, which first of all comes to you as your true, your own true spiritual identity, then, as a son of God, you begin to reflect every other idea. That is, you begin to be conscious. Whenever you're conscious of anything, you reflect it. Whenever you're conscious of anything. Then you begin to reflect every other idea. And then you begin to see the universality of the Christ. You begin to see the universality of the divine idea translated. And then that translates for you. It translates mortal mind out of itself through analysis. It gives you the ability to analyze mortal mind and see what it is. See its nothingness. It's utter and complete nothingness. And then it gives you the ability to drag the serpent out of his hole and expose it, to uncover it, as Mizzetti calls it. And then it gives you the ability to put your heel on the head of the serpent and destroy it
and replace it with spiritual fact. Replace it with spiritual fact. You know, Moses had that same when he saw his staff become a serpent. And he had the three proofs of the overcoming of sin, disease, and death. He had exactly the same experience. And as the Christ idea comes to you, it begins to analyze the physical to you as the physical. It shows you it's just the physical. It's the carnal mind. No thing, no place, no power, no condition, no mind, no person. And then it shows you, it uncovers the whole thing, brings it to the surface. And Mazzetta says that error uncovered is two-thirds destroyed. And the remaining third pierces itself. If you have a lie, that lie tries to hide itself as a lie. You begin to analyze the situation and you see, well, here, that's a lie. And then you say, well, we've got to deal with that. We'll bring it to the surface. So you tackle the origin of the lie and you say, now that's a lie. Come on. Let's have it out. Then you bring that lie to the surface. And then you correct the lie. You reverse it and you replace it with that which is truth. And so in every condition you have that analysis, uncovering and annihilation. Christ's truth gives mortals temporary food and clothing. It does. Christ's truth gives mortals temporary food and clothing. Suppose you're poor. That's a belief. That's all it is. It's a belief. It's a belief that's come from some other belief of circumstances in which you live, or heredity, or fear, or laziness, or something of the kind. Well, Christ's truth comes into that situation, and the first thing you know is Christ's truth will act upon that human belief and cause it to disappear. I've seen that time and time and time and time again. And it doesn't matter whether it's a belief in big business or whether it's a belief in small family affairs. Christ's truth, when understood, acts upon every phase of human belief and causes mortal mind to give up its beliefs of poverty and lack and limitation of every kind. And I've seen it happen time and time again. I've seen it happen in the biggest businesses, and I've seen it happen in the smallest homes. I've seen it happen time and time again, that Christ's truth gives mortals temporary food and clothing until the material, transformed with the ideal, disappears, and man is clothed and fed spiritually. Well, today, you and I eat a certain amount of material food to keep this thing going. We stoke up the fire to keep this thing going. But we're beginning to see that what really matters is that we're clothed and fed spiritually. Day in and day out, you and I are recognizing that the primary thing is to be clothed and fed spiritually. And day in and day out, we're filling our thought with the divine facts about God and about man. Just filling our thought with them. And it's renewing us in every way. It's renewing our thinking, our bodies, our homes, our businesses, and everything else. It's renewing the whole situation. So that if any man be in Christ, he's a new creature. All things are passed away. Fear, hate, jealousy, envy, greed, selfishness, materiality, laziness, and the outcome of those things. And all things are become new. All things are become of the nature and substance of spirit, of reality. And so, Christ's truth gives mortals temporary food and clothing until the material transformed with the ideal disappears and man is clothed and fed spiritually. St. Paul says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. That's the beginning of everything. Work out, that's where charity begins. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. St. Paul says, with fear and trembling, then quotes Jesus. Jesus said, fear not, little flock,
For it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom and the whole kingdom. Love has a Christ, a saving, healing, redeeming, satisfying, sanctifying presence and power. Christ is the great physician, the great surgeon, the great redeemer, the great restorer. Christ is the comforter, the great comforter of mankind. And Christ is truth. Christ is the truth that God knows about himself and his own creation. Christ is the divine ideal, and that Christ is ever present and ever available. And that Christ, our divine ideal, comes to you and to me and to all mankind today in a measure as a calculus of divine ideas, just as mathematics or music comes to us, as a calculus of ideas. As a calculus of divine ideas, which we understand through this symbolism of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, when this symbolism today, at last, in human experience, is put into a perfect ordered system in the present-day terminology. The effort of the scriptures has always been, from the beginning, from the days of creation that begin the Bible, down to the city foursquare that climaxes, the effort of the Bible has been to tell the story in divine order. And today, that story is told in divine order so that you and I can lay hold on the ideas of mind, of spirit, of soul, of principle, of life, of truth, and of love, and see how they operate in four direct orders of the Word, God's revelation of himself, coming to you and to me and forcing us to seek. The Christ, God's translation of his own ideal, coming to you and to me and causing us to find. Christianity, God's reflection of his own ideal, coming to you and to me as using or proving and forcing us to gain some sense of divine values. And God's interpretation of his own infinite being in science coming to you to me as some sense of essential being today. And that is the system today that we have, and the system that it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And that system is puncture-proof. It's a system that has always existed. It isn't the system that Ms. Eddy or anybody else invented. It's a system that has always existed from everlasting to everlasting, that inspired thinkers. It's a system that Jesus used and proved to perfection. It's a system of which he said, I will send you another comforter, even the Spirit of Truth, that he may abide with you forever. And it's going to abide forever. Nothing can turn it back now. Nothing in all the world, if men and women will accept it, in that degree it will abide forever. This truth, Ms. Eddy says, is Christian science. And then she ends and she says, Christian scientists, be a law to yourselves that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake.
This is the end of the recording.